Thank you. All right. Well, kind of hard to preach after something like that, isn't it? But I'd like to ask you to join me with a little journey through God's Word this morning. To kind of get things started, I have recruited a couple of people to help me. Wayne Scott has said he would be willing to be a little bit of a help to me today, and Dalton Seaburn said he would help me. So I'm going to ask these guys to come up here and stand with me a little bit. You'll notice that the title of this message is The Pharisee and the Tax Collector. Now, I don't know, I'm not that much of a movie buff, and I'm not real good at knowing all this, but I imagine some of you know about so many of the movies today seem to want to present to you someone who is the good guy, supposed to be the good guy. You know, maybe he's the police officer. He's the police officer, or he is often the religious person, or the pastor, or the priest, or something like that. And they are the good guy that starts out in the movie, but as the movie goes along, they become the bad guy. Remember some stories like that? Okay. And usually in that same movie, they will have a bad guy, bad past, all kinds of things going on in their past where they've got a bad reputation. But in the midst of the movie, they become the hero and the really good guy. You know stories like that? It seems like they like to make the good guys look bad and the bad guys look good. Okay. Did you know that was something that Jesus did too? He told stories like that. And today we're going to be listening to one of those stories in which the bad guy is the good guy and the good guy is the bad guy. Okay? It's the story, as you'll see, of the... they messed me up there by putting it ahead. By the Pharisee and the tax collector. Okay? And the Pharisee and the tax collector, one of them is a really good guy. And to play the part of our really good guy, who's actually the bad guy, okay, the really good guy is Brother Wayne Scott. Can you imagine a better person to play this role? Okay. I don't know of anybody who we think more well of than Wayne. Okay, so we really do. We like you. Okay. Okay. But I just want you to know you're going to be a bad guy. Okay. And another really good friend of mine, and it's not because Dalton is a bad guy, okay, but he gets to play one in this movie. You know, it's sort of like I'm a doctor in the movies or something like that. But Dalton is going to be the guy that nobody likes, okay? But really, he's the good guy, okay? You get to be the hero in this story. Okay, so here we go. Okay, now, I want to first describe to you the good guy to you, okay? Isn't that pretty? Somebody's going to have to move that ahead. I don't know what's going on here. Oh, there it goes. Okay. Here we go. The Pharisee. Now, in the New Testament, you probably know in the Gospels that Pharisees begin to have a pretty bad reputation, particularly with Jesus. Jesus was really tough on the Pharisees, wasn't he? But the reality is that in the first century, Jerusalem or Jewish Palestine, and so forth, the Pharisees were really considered to be the best of the best of the whole people around them. If you were a Pharisee, when anybody saw you, they would say, now that is the really, really good guy in our society, okay? And the reasons were pretty good, okay? First of all, the Pharisees had the reputation of knowing the Old Testament scriptures better than anybody else. They studied them backwards and forwards. Many of them could quote the entire Torah, the first five books of the Bible, by memory. These guys spent their whole lives trying to know and understand scriptures better than anyone else. I mean, they were really, truly religious. But they weren't just people who knew the scriptures well. they also were absolutely committed to living the Scriptures very precisely. They knew all of the laws of the Old Testament. They knew all of the ways that those had been developed in the traditions of trying to interpret them. And the Pharisees committed themselves to following every single one of them to the very best. I mean, when somebody saw a Pharisee, they say, there's somebody who not only talks the talk, but they live the walk. Walk the talk as well. Okay, Pharisees were really the good guys, okay? But they were also very, very committed to trying to convince others to follow the law and to be righteous people and so forth. So I want to tell you what, the Pharisees were the really, really the best of the best. And when Jesus tells this story that we're going to be looking at today, he chooses the best that he can think of to be this example, okay? So meet Mr. Pharisee. Okay, that's you. Okay. I thought about trying to get you a little, you know, all this kind of stuff, but we didn't have that. Okay. In first century Jewish culture, there was no one who was worse than the tax collectors. They were the lowest of the low. When anybody saw a tax collector, they were worse than murderers, they were worse than robbers, they were worse than anybody else. And I'll tell you why, okay? First of all, they were Jewish people who had sold themselves out to work in behalf of the Roman occupiers. Can you imagine? In other words, just by the very fact of what they were doing, they were considered traitors to their own people. That's pretty bad, okay? But they did not only do that, but in doing their work, because what their job was to collect the taxes from their fellow Jewish people in behalf of the Roman government, and in so doing, they were given the power to collect as much as they could, even if it meant cheating the people, their own people, out of their money. So not only were they traitors, they were cheaters, okay? Can you imagine trying to live and seeing somebody who's a tax collector? They're supposed to be on your side, but they're on the other side. And not only are they on the other side, they're cheating you out of your money. If you see a tax collector coming, you know that they were out to get you. But not only were they traitors, and not only were they cheaters, they also became extremely rich. In fact, of all the people in the Roman in the days in which Jesus lived, the tax collectors became some of the most wealthy people as a result of that, and they enriched themselves excessively. So they had it made, except for one thing: they were the worst of the worst. So you can see here that when Jesus begins to tell the story that he is about to tell, he is using the best of the best and the worst of the worst is his examples. And the story goes, as we find here in Luke chapter 18, verses 9 to 14. I'm going to read this for you. And as we go along here, we're going to set it up a little bit. It says, to some who are confident in their own righteousness and look down at everyone else, Jesus told them this parable. Now, it's telling us, it's a parable. He's not talking about anybody in particular. He's using these two examples of the type of people, a Pharisee and a tax collector, okay? And it says, two men went up to the temple to pray, a Pharisee and a tax collector. Now, we would expect the Pharisee to be there. We don't expect this guy to be anywhere around, okay? We expect him to have a reason to be there because he's the good guy, the best of the best. We expect him to be staying away because he's the worst of the worst. Okay? The Pharisee stood by himself and prayed. Okay, Mr. Pharisee, we want you to go up there on that box and stand on that because, you see, when you come to pray, you want everybody to notice just how righteous and holy you are. He's standing up in the middle of the temple. He wants to be, see, I'm here to pray. I'm not like that guy. No, okay. Yeah. So, this is how he prays. God, I thank you. Now, these are honest prayers, okay? But he says, God, I thank you that I am not like other people, robbers, evildoers, adulterers, and even like that evil tax collector. I fast twice a week and give a tenth of what I get. Well, that's actually a pretty honest prayer. We'll talk about that in just a little bit. But the scripture goes on to say this. The tax collector stood at a distance. Get away. Go down there. Get over there where we can't see you very well. Get down there, okay? Because no one needs to know you're here, okay? Because you don't have a right to be here. You don't, okay? And he wouldn't even look up. Look down. You don't, just you might as well because you're worthless. Okay. The tax collector stood at a distance. He would not even look up to heaven, but he beat his breast. Now the reason you beat your breast, it's not because you're Tarzan. Okay. The reason you're beating your breast, that is an expression of real agony and grief for who you are. Okay. You're looking the wrong way, though. You're looking down. Okay. And he said, God, have mercy on me, a sinner. Jesus went on to say, I tell you that this man went home justified before God. For all those who exalt themselves, there, look at me, will be humbled. And those who humble themselves will be exalted. Okay, you guys are off the hook now. Thank you. So let's talk about this passage a little bit and try to help us to understand better what I didn't follow through. Okay. First of all, I think it's important for us to understand that both of these men are praying honestly and truthfully. They are saying what is true about themselves and about how they feel and what they believe. So when we look at the prayer of this Pharisee, you'll notice that his prayer, honestly, is a prayer of self-exaltation. It is, I am praying to make sure I look good. And I am praying in such a way that I can feel good about my time in prayer. You see, he wanted to be noticed. It's very easy for us in our goodness to want to make sure other people are noticing that we're doing and being good, isn't it? It just kind of stinks to do a lot of really good paint stuff for the Lord and no one even notices that we've done it. The Pharisee was going to make sure that doesn't happen. Look at me. Okay? Who of us don't find ourselves wanting our good things to be noticed? We want people to think well of us. And his primary way of exalting himself was to compare himself to those that in all reality were less than him. He was better than the robbers. He was better than the sinners. He was better than all these other things. He was especially better than that tax collector. And he had every right to be thankful for that. You will notice that in this passage, Jesus does not condemn him for being grateful for what God had helped him to be. The problem is that he got his sense of worth by trying to compare himself with others. Thirdly, he wanted to make sure that God remembered all the good things that he was doing. Isn't that amazing how sometimes we want to tell God what we think, what we know that he already knows, but we just want to make sure he hasn't forgotten? Lord, I just want to remind you that I went to church last Sunday and I actually gave money in the offering. Oh, God, I want you to remember that I even fasted. Okay, see, the reality is it's really, really hard for us as Christians to do the work of being what God calls us to be without wanting to make sure that God remembers us in doing it. Because somehow or the other, we actually think that by doing all those things, we're going to get some extra brownie points when the time comes. Self-exaltation, okay? And the truth is, if you're a good person, and you know what I've noticed? I think all of you fit that category. You're good people. And the danger, the temptation, the desire is to puff ourselves up in some way and say, look at me. But the tax collector's prayer was also truthful. It was also honest. It was a prayer of reality. But notice the components of his prayer. He did everything he could to avoid being noticed. The last thing he wanted was to be acknowledged for his even being present with God, because he understood that he had no right to be there. He not only avoided being noticed, but he recognized how bad he is. Now, this tells you something, that this is not any normal tax collector. Because most of the tax collectors were kind of proud of what they had done to be able to cheat everybody. But this tax collector is different. He is beating his breast in agony and repentance and guilt and shame for what he knew he really was, a sinner. And he also knew that his only hope of salvation was that God would show him mercy. His need for mercy, because there was no way he could make it right on his own. That's pretty powerful, isn't it? If you'll notice that I think, when I think about this particular story, the reality is I have a lot more in common in my own personal life with this guy than I do that guy. And that's probably true of most of us here today. We have become pretty accustomed to being the good guys. And it's really easy for us in being the good guys that we put confidence in our own righteousness. I am a good guy. I am a righteous person, not because I think I'm perfect, but I'm sure better than those Democrats, or for some of us, for those Republicans. I'm sure better than those other people who are different than I am, worse than I am. And you know what? None of us that are sitting here today have to look very hard around us to find people who are more sinful than we are, do we? And in being able to compare ourselves and look down at others and pass judgment of others, somehow or the other, we think that our judgment of others somehow or the other elevates our own righteousness, that, well, since I'm not like them, I must be okay. And I'm praying the prayer that says, thank God I'm not like them. And in so doing, begin to take pride and satisfaction in my own righteousness and my own goodness. I don't know about you, but there's a little bit of conviction that comes when I start comparing myself to that Pharisee. Okay. I don't know what I did to that right now. Okay. Yeah, I did expect a blank there. I want to talk to you a little bit about this. Jesus said that only one of these prayers brought about the result that every single one of us need. And it was not the prayer of self-exaltation, of pride, of satisfaction, of self-righteousness. It was the prayer that was desperate for God's grace and mercy for the sin of which he was guilty. Now, here's the problem we have. When we had Wayne up there on that thing there, he was certainly above this guy, wasn't he? But I just need you to know that where Wayne was not even close to where God is. God's righteousness and holiness was so far beyond anything that this man could accomplish in his life, no matter how much he knew, no matter how good he was, no matter how much judgment he gave of others, there was no way that his righteousness was enough to satisfy the righteousness that God needs from us in order to truly be who he's called us to be. He was just as lost, just as gone in his relationship with God as this guy was. And when it came to experiencing righteousness and salvation, justification, we'll never get there by remembering how good we are. We'll only get there to remember how much we need God's mercy. How much it is only by God's grace we are anything that we are. That we have a spirit and an attitude of humility. It says, Lord, I am nothing, but you are everything. And anything that I am because of your grace, not because of who I am or what I have done. Lord, I still need your grace. I still need your mercy. This was not a parable that is trying to help us to think that we have to be like the tax collector in order to be saved. What it is a parable is saying the attitude, the spirit, the honesty that recognizes, Lord, I don't have a right to be here in your presence. Lord, I need your forgiveness and grace in my life. And it's the person who lives in that kind of spirit of humility and grace that when other people get to really know them, they say, ah, that's the kind of person that shows the grace and the love of Jesus in their lives. And that's the type of person that glorifies him by being better than the Pharisee who was the best of the best. Now, here's something you could really easily miss in Luke. And that is, this parable is given in chapter 18. And just a little bit later in chapter 19, we are surprised by another tax collector. And this is a story almost every one of us have known. It's the story of Zacchaeus. Remember that one? I've preached on Zacchaeus before, never quite like this, but I often make us all sing, Zacchaeus was a wee little man was he, but we're not going to do that today. I won't put you through that. But this is a story in which we find a tax collector in real life living out the prayer of this tax collector that was a part of the parable. So let's listen to that story again. And then maybe let it teach us what it takes to be the kind of person that God can truly use for His glory. Jesus entered Jericho and was passing through. By the way, do you know where Jesus is heading at this time? He's on his way to Jerusalem. You know what's going to happen when he gets there? He's going to die for you and me. Okay? He's going to give his life, and he's going to make it the reality of the presence of God's kingdom available to every single one of us. Okay, Jesus entered Jericho and was passing through. A man was there by the name of Zacchaeus, and he was a chief tax collector and was wealthy. Okay, in other words, Zacchaeus is one of the worst of the worst. Nobody wanted Zacchaeus anywhere near. Okay, I can imagine that when people saw Zacchaeus coming, he was a wee little man, but he was one mean, nasty dude. He wanted to see who Jesus was. But because he was short, he could not see over the crowd. So he ran ahead and climbed a sycamore tree to see him, since Jesus was passing that way. Now, I need you to know something. Right now, we see something happening in Zacchaeus' life. He is willing to acknowledge that he is a little man. And he knows, I think, that he is not just a little man in stature. He is a little man in character as well. And he is willing to humiliate himself to have to climb up a tree in order to be seen, to see Jesus. When Jesus reached the spot, he looked up and said to him, "Zacchaeus, come down immediately. I must stay at your house today." Now, is there anything about that that kind of makes you wonder? How in the world did Jesus know who Zacchaeus was? Maybe he had a reputation. I don't know. Maybe he was so bad that everybody knew how bad he was. But I do know one thing. Jesus knew him and wanted him, wanted to be with him, wanted to make his presence real. To go to someone's house was to acknowledge, "You are my friend. I love you. I care about you." So Zacchaeus came down at once and welcomed him gladly. All the people saw this and began to mutter, talking about Jesus. Jesus did stuff that was not popular with the good guys. Okay? All the people, all the good guys started muttering, "He has gone to be the guest of a sinner." You know, I just want to just suggest something to you. If Jesus were to show up today, which of us do you think he would want to go home to eat with or go out to eat with on our way home? My suspicion is that most of us would not be his choice, because he would be most interested in the one of us here today who are most in need of God's grace. That's who he reached out to. But Zacchaeus stood up and said to the Lord, "Lord, look," and this is in response to the criticism that Jesus is going to be with him. But I want you to notice the change that happens in Zacchaeus. "Lord, Lord, look, Lord, here now I give half my possessions to the poor. And if I have cheated anybody out of anything, I will pay back four times the amount." Now, I don't know about you, but I think Zacchaeus, when he said that, just became the poorest of the poor. He is no longer a tax collector because he just lost his job. He is no longer the richest man because he just now gave away even more than he ever took. Jesus said to him, "Today salvation has come to this house, because this man too is the son of Abraham. For the Son of Man came to seek and to save that which was lost. We think, most of us, that we're a bunch of good people because of all the good things we do. We love the church. We love Jesus. We serve Him, all that stuff. We're convinced of our own goodness. But Zacchaeus just became better than every one of us. Why? Because of what happened when he really met Jesus. It changed everything. We see with the story of Zacchaeus, we're surprised by what happens to this little man, because Zacchaeus became that little man that's down there saying, "Lord, I don't have any right to be here. Be merciful to me." So I'd like to end with suggesting things of what does it take to become better than the best. And that was, number one, Zacchaeus' biggest priority was to get to know Jesus. He was not nearly as concerned about what other people thought as he was in making sure that he sought after and desired a relationship with Jesus Christ, because that is the only thing that's going to make a difference in his life. And I am convinced that one of the things that happens to us as church Christians, as good people, is we get so wrapped up in doing all the good things that we fail to really want to know Jesus more than anything else. Because that's a priority. The second thing, he humbly accepted the invitation that came from Jesus. Jesus communicated to Zacchaeus that Jesus wanted a relationship with Zacchaeus even more than Zacchaeus wanted a relationship with him. Zacchaeus knew he did not have the nerve to ask Jesus to come to his house. But Zacchaeus learned that Jesus wanted him, of all people, to come and fellowship and to know him and to be him, because I think Jesus knew that it takes people like this to truly become the kind of people that exceed the righteousness of the scribes and the Pharisees. And that changed everything for Zacchaeus. His whole life was turned upside down. Everything that he had been living before was now gone. The old man had died, because now it is Christ living in him. And he becomes the righteousness that becomes possible only through a relationship with Jesus Christ. Now, here's the important thing to notice here. Getting saved made a real change in Zacchaeus' life. He couldn't get saved unless everything changed. The old life was gone, and now the new life with Jesus has become his reality. And what was that life expressed in? A life filled with generosity and love, even for those who were his enemies. He was willing to do all that he could to make things right, even at the price of what it would take to do it. You know, he said, if I've cheated anybody, I'm going to make it right. No, I'm not just going to make it right. I'm going to give them back four times. That's a courageous life, but it's also a sacrificial life. Jesus said, whoever wants to save his life is willing to lose it for my kingdom. We make so much, it seems to me, in the church about become a Christian so your life can become better. I think the question should be, become a Christian so your life can become more like Jesus. But sometimes there's a life that says, come and die and give and love as Jesus loved. And the only way you and I can do that is to recognize that though we think we're like Him, in reality, we're a lot more like Him. And more than ever, throughout our lives and as Christians, we continue to live with the prayer that says, Lord, have mercy on me, for I am a sinner saved by grace. So in closing, I'd like for us to do something that we don't do as much in the church as we used to. I'd like to open the altars and invite us to be like that tax collector who humbles himself before the Lord and says, Lord, I need your mercy. I don't know if you've ever noticed that in the tradition of our church, we have these altars all the way across the front. And you'll notice that you can't come to the altar and act like this guy. Look at me! How do you come to the altar? You come and kneel humbly before the Lord and seek His grace. He finds us. He loves us. Do you want Jesus more than anything? Do you realize that Jesus wants to be with you? He wants to go home with you today. But it'll change everything. And you come just as I am, without one plea. Would you stand with me, please? I invite you to come if you'd like. If not, just pray about this, will you? Let's be open to being honest to the Lord for who He is for us and to seek His grace.